Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50. Krishna establishes Dwarka. At the end of the chapter, last two verses, text 56 and 57. So text 56, yet, whatever, Bhagavata, by the Supreme Lord, dattam, given, adhipatyam, delegated power of control, swa, their own, siddhaye, for facilitating the exercise of authority, sarvam, all, patyarpayam, asuhu, they offered back, harau, to Krishna, bhumi, to the earth, gate, kam, nripa, O King Parikshit. Yad yad bhagavata dattam adhipatyam swasiddhaye sarvam patyarpayamasur hara bhumi gate nirpa. Yad yad bhagavata dattam adhipatyam swasiddhaye sarvam patyarpayamasur hara bhumi gate nirpa. Yad yad bhagavata dattam adhipatyam swasiddhaye sarvam pratyarpayamasur hara bhumi gate nirpa. Ladies.
Yad yad bhagavata dattam Sustite. Sarvam Patyarpayamasur Arabhumi Yate Nirpa Yajir Bhagavata Dattam Adhipatyam Susiddhaye Sarvam Pratyarpayamasur Arabhumi Yate Nirpa.
Translation. The Supreme Lord having come to the earth, O King, these demigods now offered him whatever powers of control he had previously delegated to them for the exercise of their particular authority. Text 57, we can chant together.
Tatra yoga prabhavena nitva sarva janam hari Prajapalena Ramena Krishna Samanumantritaha Nirjagama Puradvara Padmamali Nirayudaha.
After transporting all his subjects to the new city by the power of his mystic yoga maya, Lord Krishna consulted with Lord Balaram, who had remained in Mathura to protect it. Then, wearing a garland of lotuses but bearing no weapons, Lord Krishna went out of Mathura by its main gate. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verses from Sri Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, to describe how Lord Krishna transferred the citizens from Mathura to Dwaraka.
Shushuptan maturayam tu paurang statra janardana udhritya sahasaratra varakayam yaveshayat prabhudhaste jana sarve putradara samandita haimaharmya tole vishta vismayam paramam yayuhu.
In the middle of the night, as the citizens of Mathura slept, Lord Janardana suddenly removed them from that city and placed them in Dwaraka. When the men awoke, they were amazed to find themselves, their children, and their wives sitting inside palaces made of gold. Pretty bold. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 50th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Krishna Establishes the City of Dwaraka.
Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Yad Yad Bhagavata Dattam Adipatyam Susiddhaye Sarvam patyar payamasu haro bhumi gate nirpa.
So we heard in the previous verses mention of Varuna, Kuvera, Indra giving offerings to Lord Krishna in his new city of Dwaraka. Sometimes when devotees they move into a new house, then they have a housewarming, and devotees bring them gifts. When we had our housewarming, I remember one gift still there. Kalakanta gave me a pickaxe. He says, I know it's an unusual gift, but you'll find use for it. And I definitely did. And it didn't break either. That's one thing. You get a gift like that. So the demigods, they have amazing things. We're hearing about Kuvera. Nobody seems to know exactly what these things are. But he's considered the treasurer of the demigods because he has the eight treasures. I've always wondered what it means to be the treasurer of the demigods. You have to go something and you, Prabhu, can you give me some money? I need to travel somewhere. I need some toothpaste. I'm not sure what the treasurer of the demigods does exactly. What currency they use on that level. In any case, they all have great opulences. In the Krishna book, and Srila Prabhupada is describing this scene, he says that there are 33 million demigods, and they all came and brought something to Krishna. So, really had a house full of gifts, palaces full of gifts. So this is the, of course, the example being set here is so nice by these demigods. They're, we often hear things, often or in Krishna's pastimes, it comes up how some of these devas, they get in trouble, they don't look so good, and we hear about how they have material desires and so on. They're not completely pure devotees, they're sakama devotees, but they are Vishnu bhaktas, Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva. You can't be a demigod unless you're a Vishnu bhakta, devotee of Krishna. In fact, Prabhupada says in one purport that the demigods have the maximum amount of good qualities possible in the material world. So these are very qualified persons, especially if they have if you're one of the administrative demigods, the 33 million demigods. Sounds like a lot, but it's a very small number when you consider how many living entities there are in the universe. Only 33 million, or maybe it's, probably says 33 crores, but then he translates it as 33 million, but actually 33 crores would be 330 million, although he generally says 33 million. In any case, these unique personalities in this universe, they're given responsibility by Krishna, and they're given power to do it, and different kinds of facility. So we had some examples here of Indra giving the Sudharma assembly hall. This was discussed yesterday, what it means to not die. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book that during the meetings there, anyone who was there was not inflicted by the miseries of old age. So that's another side of it. That would be usually people want to leave meetings quickly, so if you go to a Sudharma assembly hall meeting, probably want to stick around for a while, stay around for the cookies and milk at the end. Actually, I was just reading a pastime of Krishna in the Sudharma assembly hall. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita, so nice, you get some kind of expanded descriptions of different things. So you read about Krishna in Dwarka, because Gopakumar has made it to Dwarka, the Dwarka outside this material universe. And one thing about Gopakumar, wherever he goes, he never changes his clothes. I mean, not that they're not clean, but he wears the cowherd boy, Vesh. He wears Gopal Vesha wherever he goes. So in Dwarka, the citizens of Dwarka, he was around for a few days. They were saying, you know, maybe you should dress like us, and look like everybody else. Because they thought, they're opulent. They wear big turbans and, you know, what they're kshatriyas. They're wealthy people, and so they're dressed with all kinds of jewels and ornaments and fine silks and so on. So they're seeing this person dressing in a dhoti. They're thinking, what? You know, put some clothes on. You know, get dressed up nice in Dwarka. But he's not. This is who I am. This is who I am. So, of course, Uddhava understands. So Uddhava understands the residents of Dwarka because he's been there and seen firsthand. He's unique of Braja. He's unique among the residents of Dwarka like that. Most of the residents of Dwarka, they don't really understand Braja. But Uddhava does because Krishna has sent him there. So he understands his mentality. He brings Uddhava's already there, but Gopakumara comes in. And when Krishna sees him, immediately Krishna starts praising him and welcoming him and actually going into ecstasy. Because as soon as he sees Gopakumar, then he thinks about Braja and all the residents of Braja. And then Uddhava has to intervene and sort of calm down Krishna. This isn't the time and place for this. You have to be careful how you act in front of the Dwarakavasis because they're in a different mood. So he kind of quickly ends the meeting and takes Krishna. And Krishna takes Gopakumara. Actually, Krishna starts glorifying Gopakumara. Oh, my friend, I missed you so much. And that's so nice to have you here. And all the Dwarakavasis are looking on. They're wondering what's going on. This boy in the destined a Dodi, and our master sitting on his big throne is acting like this. So actually, when Krishna leaves, the assembly kind of quickly wraps things up, and he goes into his inner quarters. There, apparently, near the one thing I thought was interesting was that when Krishna went, he left with his 16,108 queens. They all left with him from the assembly house. So I kind of had it, always had it in my head that because Krishna leaves all his palaces, and he's in all each one of the palaces, he's doing something different. We hear about when Narada visits there. But it's described how when Krishna goes into the Dwarka, into the Sudharma assembly house, then he becomes just one Krishna. One Krishna goes in. So somehow one Krishna goes in, but all his wives are there too at the same time. So apparently this is one of those other kinds of phenomena where they all think that maybe they're the only one there with the Krishna. This kind of thing goes on. So they all leave with Krishna and they go into the back, and then Krishna takes care of, or he greets Uddhava, he greets Gopakumar. And again, Uddhava has to sort of calm him down because he wants to go into ecstasy. So anyway, this one Leela in the Sudharma assembly hall, which was given by King Indra. So he must have gotten some brownie points for that, all the trouble he gets into. So he provided this Sudharma assembly hall. And these others, they also have, of course, this is something astonishing. So Indra can give this astonishing house for Krishna's service. And what can we give? The actually, this verse today, it begins, yad yad, whatever, bhagavata dattam. So, in other words, whatever they could give, whatever was at their disposal, they gave. Because they realized that Krishna has given me this power, or this thing, whatever it is, the parijata. We know the pastime that Krishna, he stole the parijata flower, being coaxed by Satyabhama. So he stole it, but, well, how can he steal it? How is it there, except because he put it there? It's only by Krishna's mercy that it's there in the first place. So he doesn't steal anything. It all belongs to him anyway. But one of the first realizations or lessons one has to learn in spiritual life is whatever we have, it's not ours. It's Krishna's. It's given, whatever we have temporarily is given to us by Krishna. And it doesn't take a big brain, huge intelligence to realize we don't have anything. Because we come with nothing and we leave with nothing. We can't take it with us. We have this slogan, you can't take it with you, but people don't really believe it. They're kind of hoping, oh, maybe. Put some things in my casket just in case. In fact, I think in different cultures they have different rituals like that. Put things there with the departing person. In fact, they used to have what is that expression? Pay the piper? When you're crossing, you pay the ferryman. When you're ferried over to the beyond, whatever it is, you may have to pay the ferryman. So in some cultures, they would bury people with a coin between the teeth. Of course, grave robbers would come and dig people up to get the coins. So they wouldn't be able to pay the ferryman when the time came. But anyway, this idea is that, well, maybe you need to take something with you just in case you have to pay somebody to cross the river Styx, I guess it is in the Judeo-Christian tradition. So, but we know that really you're not going to take anything with you. It's all going to stay behind, especially this body. So many places Prabhupada talks about, I listen to so many lectures of Prabhupada, and so often he talks about how this body is temporary and we have to go on. And how can they not understand? How can they not understand that just as we're changing from one body to the next in this life, we will again give up this body? We've given up so many bodies, so why should we think we're not going to give up another one, this the last one, and take another one? So we will. We have to give them up. We're giving them up actually at every moment the body is changing. I remember when, I don't know how long this idea has been around. Every 7 years your body changes. Maybe that's changed too. But it was popular. Devotees used to talk about this in the 70s. And somebody brought it up in a morning walk one time. Prabhupada, we change our bodies every 7 years. And Prabhupada said, every moment you are changing your body. Every moment it is a different body. So, and it's changing not according to our will or our desire. This is also one of the arguments that we say it's not ours. If it were ours, then we would have power over, control over it. Just like if you have possession of something, then you can decide whether you want to destroy it or sell it or what you want to do with it. Theoretically, at least, in principle. But the fact is, we don't own anything because we don't have control over it. Especially our bodies, we can see. We don't want them to change. We don't want them to get old. But it's happening. It'll happen to all of us. And we have no control over it because it's not ours. The body's not ours or anything we have. This sense of it is mine, it's one of the two, the pair of fundamental pillars of material existence. Mama, aham, and mama. Aham mama iti, aham mama iti. So aham and mama. In Bhagavad Gita we get nirmama. This is one of the things we have to learn. If you want to go back to Godhead, then you have to get rid of this idea, mama. These things belong to me. But nirmama, no, it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to Krishna. Whatever it is, it belongs to Krishna. So we don't have great assets, great facilities like the devas, but we have something. Whatever we have, give it to Krishna. With the mentality that actually it belongs to Krishna anyway. I'm just, somehow or other, it has come into my possession. Let me use it for eternal benefit by giving it back to Krishna. Sannamitte varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. This is a Chanakya shloka, I think. It says that whatever we have, it's going to be taken away from us anyway. So while we have it, we might as well use it for something valuable. Just like if I give you some, there may be, who knows, maybe there's some game show like this. You have, here's $1,000, you got 5 minutes to spend it. So you just want to spend it as fast as you could and make sure you used it up. You wouldn't want to be left over with anything. So whatever we have is going to be taken away from us. So use it, otherwise you're going to lose it. That's another one of our expressions, right? Lose it or use it or lose it. So that's a fact. We're going to lose it all. And if you don't use it for Krishna, then it's useless. You haven't gained anything from it. You've used it for this body that is going to die, this perishable body. We're putting so much energy, all of our energy, all of our thoughts, all of our prana, artha, dhyā, vācha is going into this body. And things related to this body, which is going to die, which is going to be destroyed. It's like you're putting, like you're going to destroy your house. Sometimes a house is condemned, so the government's going to come and tear it down. One of their big wrecking balls, smash it to pieces. So you don't go in there the day before and put in new curtains and new flooring or whatever. You know? It's going to be smashed the next day. So that's going to happen. This is going to be smashed, destroyed. All the things we get, primary assets we have, we're told in this shloka, etavas janmasapolyam dehinami hadehishu pranayartha diyavacha. What is it? Shreya acharanam sada. This is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This verse is quoted. It's from the 11th canto. I think it's from the instructions to Uddhava. So it says that it's the duty of every human being to help other living beings. As Lord Chaitanya also said this. Praninam upakaraya. Upakar means, karda means to do. And upa, I guess it means for others, or it means good works. Upa, good works. So do good works for others. That's actually the purpose of life. That's our function in life. Our dharma is to not think of ourselves, to help other living beings. So this shloka from the 11th canto says, you do it with especially four things that we have. Prana, artha, dhyā, and vācha. So prana means our life breath. In other words, our life itself, our whole life, is meant to be serving others. And some specifics are given. Artha means our wealth. So whatever that is, it may be great, it may be small. If you're a king, we read in the Bhagavatam how Ambarish Maharaj, he could worship the Lord in great opulence. Or Swayambhuva Manu, he had great opulence after he arranged the marriage of Devahuti to Karma Muni. Then he went back to his capital, and his enjoyment there is described. The level of his opulence was incredible. But it was all used to worship Krishna. There's an interesting verse there that says that Swayambhuva Manu always enjoyed his material life in Krishna consciousness. So material life means the things of this world. He used them. He enjoyed them, actually. He was a king, so he had great opulence. But it was all in an atmosphere of Krishna consciousness. It was all connected to Krishna. So his wealth, he returned it to Krishna by using it in Krishna's service. And we, what do we have? Something. But it doesn't matter what it is. If it's used for Krishna, then it gives us eternal benefit. We have these in different places it's described. If you give to different persons, you get this kind of return. People are always looking for the maximum return on investment. So there's no greater return on investment than giving to Krishna. We think we're giving up something, but actually we're going to get back so many times. We would get excited if somebody told us, you know, somebody came in and said, this is a guaranteed thing, absolutely guaranteed, 100% sure. If you give $100 today, come back tomorrow, we'll give you $10,000. So the temple would probably be filled up pretty quickly. Everybody would rush to the temple with their $100. Somehow or other, they'd get $100, they'd bring it to the temple. But actually, if we give $100 to Krishna today, we'll get unlimited results in the future. All of our desires will be fulfilled by serving Krishna. I always think of this. What does this mean? All my desires will be fulfilled. I hope not. I'm really going to be in trouble. But I take it that it means that you'll be fully satisfied. Not that each individual thing, every desire. Now, of course, that happens sometimes, like Dhruva Maharaj, he had to lament because Krishna did fulfill specific desires. But I don't think that's really what it means necessarily at heart. It means that you will become fully satisfied. That comes up in two prayers we say in the morning, at least in the Tulsi prayer and also in the Guru Vandana, prayer to the spiritual master, that all desires will be fulfilled. Tulsi will fulfill all of our desires. And the spiritual master will fulfill by the perfection of service to the spiritual master, attachment to the lotus feet of the spiritual master, all desires are fulfilled. So I take that to mean I'll be fully satisfied. I won't have any other desires. Anya bilashita shunyam. I'll come to that stage. All my desires will become, other desires will be zero. They'll be canceled out. That's how they'll be satisfied. But because Krishna will fulfill us with bhakti, fill our hearts with bhakti. So if we give our artha, our wealth, in whatever way we can, actually Krishna says, patram pushpam palam toyam. If this is the only wealth you have, a flower, water, leaf, if that's all you can give, but if you give it bhaktya, because really what Krishna wants is our bhakti, he wants our heart. This is the mudra when you do pranam. This has been interpreted that you're putting your heart in your hand. Pranam. You put it by your heart. So you're offering your heart. I've always wondered, actually there are places in the Bhagavatam where it says pranams with the hands above their head. We don't usually do that, but I think Krishna had the gopis do that, right? When he stole their clothes. Put your pranams up on your head. Of course, he had a specific reason for doing it that way. But this is also a traditional way, of course. So I was thinking, well, I guess that means put your brain and offering your head too. Not just your heart, but your head too, offering to Krishna. So prana, our wealth, part of our wealth is these things. We have some control, we can say. Our consciousness, our intelligence. Of course, that's the next one in the list. Dhyā, or use our intelligence in the service of Krishna. Kriti means some pious credit. Prabhupada talks about how we have sukriti and duskriti. So sukriti means pious credit, and duskriti means you have some credit, and it also, that credit could be intelligence. To be educated, to be learned, to have good brain, that's as a result of good deeds in the past. But if you use it for nonsense, not for Krishna, then what's the use? Mayaya parita jnana. One whose intelligence is stolen by illusion. This is one of the four categories of the demons. They may have great intelligence. In fact, sometimes we can get a little intimidated. We may hear, oh, these people, they seem like they're so smart. They look down their noses at religious people. Of course, maybe we're not intimidated if we don't pay any attention. That's the best way not to be intimidated. We don't care what they say. Listen to Prabhupada instead, the real intelligent person, and we'll see how he categorizes these mudhas, rascals. They may appear to be intelligent, but they have no intelligence. Krishna ye bhaje se bada chatur. Chatur means intelligent or clever. They think they're so clever by doing this or that. But Krishna ye bhaje se bada chatur. Greatly intelligent is one who worships Krishna. So that's intelligence. So using our intelligence in the service of Krishna, that's real intelligence. And then vacha, our words. Prabhupada was so insistent in saying that we use our words for Krishna. Don't talk nonsense. In fact, Prabhupada was so businesslike in the sense of devotees doing service. I'll give you this one example. I'm not sure if this was, I think this is on the memoirs somewhere. I'm not sure if it's been played on Sunday or not, but probably it was. But there's this one leela. I can't forget which devotees were involved in it, but it's kind of interesting. I don't want to put too much into it, but this devotee had seen, I think it was in Mayapur, devotee had gone in, it was someone who had something like a personal, you can say, direct relationship with Prabhupada. So he went to, he was a senior devotee. So he had some meeting with Prabhupada, and as a result of that meeting, he was given some new service to do. So he left, he was kind of in bliss, so I got some new service to do, and he walked out of Prabhupada's room, and at the top of the stairs in Mayapur, where Prabhupada's room was on the second floor, then he met some devotee that he used to serve with, who was one of Prabhupada's servants. He said, oh, nice to see you, I haven't seen you in a long time. And they just embraced and just started talking, oh, what are you doing? And just like one or two minutes later, Prabhupada's servant came out and said, Prabhupada doesn't want you wasting time talking out here. He wants you, you have a service to do, go on and do your service. So the devotees were just chatting, in a friendly chat. But Prabhupada, from Prabhupada's perspective, in fact, he used to say it sometimes, he would complain to his servant, whenever two come together, there's always this, chit-chat going on. So he was like, so concerned that we not waste any time. Now, like I say, I don't want to put too much into this because it's like you don't have to be stoic and never talk to devotees or say anything or exchange greetings or anything. But I'm just presenting one side of it. How Prabhupada was so serious about the preaching. Use our words for preaching. Yesterday I was listening to a lecture and Prabhupada said, it really struck me because Prabhupada said, he was talking about loving Krishna. We have to awaken our love for Krishna. And he said, the greatest, I can't remember the words exactly, but in essence, this is what he said. The greatest symptom of love for Krishna is, guess what he said? It wasn't ecstasy or something. He said, spreading Krishna's glories, spreading Krishna's name, fame, qualities, pastimes, and so on. Spreading, in other words, preaching. Preaching is the greatest symptom of love for Krishna. So this, you can see, this was Prabhupada's bhava. And here's a direct example of it. What is the greatest symptom of love for Krishna? That you love him so much, you have to tell others about him. You have to spread his glories. That's the greatest symptom of love for Krishna, of prema. So, this of course is Prabhupada's realization. This was his whole reason for being, you can say, was to spread Krishna consciousness. It's always so stark to me when I read, listen, especially even at 22nd Avenue, Prabhupada has these brand new devotees. In fact, all over the place, Prabhupada says. He's preaching to people who are cut. He's preaching to outsiders. He's giving a talk to the Rotary Club or something. And he's saying, you should join this movement, especially if they're Indians, of course. Bharata Bhumite, he would quote that verse always. You should help us spread this movement all over the world. He's always trying to encourage people to use everything, pranayartha diavacha, for spreading Krishna consciousness, for giving it to people, giving Krishna consciousness to everyone. So this is especially in the context of this verse, how we return the gifts to Krishna that we've received from him by glorifying him, by spreading his name and fame all over the world. This is our, and of course, not only, as Prabhupada would often say, this will do good not only to you, but to not only to others, of course, by helping them, but to you. Because Krishna is so pleased to see that. That's the gifts that we've received from him. If we use them in that way to serve him, then he'll be pleased. And when he's pleased, then there's nothing greater to gain than that. All right, I'll just read the two translations again. The Supreme Lord, having come to earth, O King, these demigods now offer to him whatever powers of control he had previously delegated to them for the exercise of their particular authority. After transporting all his subjects to the new city by the power of his mystic yoga maya, Lord Krishna consulted with Lord Balaram, who had remained in Mathura to protect it. Then, wearing a garland of lotuses but bearing no weapons, Lord Krishna went out of Mathura by its main gate. Now, any questions or comments?
Where's that reference that Prabhupada said the greatest symptom of love of God is to spread his glory?
Well, let's see. I just started listening. I tend to listen to things in order because that's the way the archive sets them up in the tape ministry, at least the one that I have. And I just started listening to the first canto, the Bhagavatam. So it's in one of the lectures that Prabhupada gave in the first canto, second chapter. I'm not sure which one it is.
Okay. Can you
find it? Narrows it down a little bit.
You could probably find it easier than I could. I'd like to get that. That's a good one.
Yeah, maybe. Unfortunately, my Veda base isn't working right now. So I'm waiting for Ekanath to come. He's coming this weekend. Help me install it again.
Okay.
So maybe I can find it after that.
Then I had a question. It seems that like the devotees oftentimes have a challenge when their bodies aren't in good health, and there's a tendency because of we're not our bodies to be a little neglectful of that. But actually, because it's Krishna's, he's letting you use it. It should be given a real high level of priority. To maintain it and keep it in good health. But it's kind of a widespread phenomena, at least among senior devotees, where that's not done. I'm wondering if you've got any particular... I know there's different references, I know, but if you have some thoughts on that.
I guess in one, my first answer is, in fact, people think of this about me. Because I'm losing weight, and
I wasn't thinking like that.
But I'm going to apply this to others. People, it's sort of like they think, why don't you take care of yourself? You know, but I'm telling you, I'm doing everything I can. I'm really trying. So when you say that about others, it may also be the same thing. You know, we're getting old. Maybe they are trying, But their service is also a priority. And part, a lot of times it's just the demand of the service. It's kind of like, well, what can I do? You know, I'm getting, you know, 100 emails a day that I, from at least leaders, they get so much email, and it's just overwhelming. So just the demands of the service that devotees have, you know, the devotees have taken on these responsibilities, leaders in our movement, and sometimes it's like, well, what can I do? You know, I'm trying, but I can't spend my whole time. Just like I tried to follow Ayurveda, but to really do it, it's like, boy, you really have to pretty much dedicate your life to just, you know, and doing all the things you're supposed to do. Because Ayurveda, it's actually about how you live. It's not just about taking this herb or that herb. It's about a lot of different things. So that's one thing in support of devotees who it may look like they're neglecting their health, but maybe they're not. But of course, I mean, because I think devotees do understand this principle. I mean, Prabhupada taught us this lesson a long time ago. Take care of yourselves. Devotees were coughing, and he would say, "What? Why is everyone sick? You should take care of yourself." So, of course, then the other question comes up, well, what do I do exactly? What, there's so many different modalities, and which one do I have faith in? It's actually a principle of healing, that you have to have faith in the doctor. This is one of the principles, especially of Ayurveda. It's said in Ayurvedic medicine that as soon as you see the doctor, if you have faith in the Kaviraj, immediately you're 50% healed. Just by... Because a lot of what's going on physically has to do with the mental state. So if you actually just think, well, this person's going to help me, you're actually halfway there already. But now we become so bewildered. You think, well, I don't know, this kind of sounds good, but I don't know, there's this modality and that one, and should I do this, or should I drink my own urine, or should I, you know... I mean, devotees have prescribed those, because that's one of them in the list, you know. The auto-urine cure. So I've done cow urine, I'll tell you. That's not bad, actually. It actually doesn't taste that bad. It's a little hard to get, though, because you have to get it fresh from the cow. So unless you live... And it has to be a calf or a heifer, not a cow that's had baby. You know, there are all these rules. So it's like, where do I go for... So, okay, I'm doing my best. I'm trying to take care of my body, but, you know, we're all going to die. So it's going to happen sooner or later. We're trying... So it's like anything, where's the balance? We can't be fanatical about it, we can't neglect it. We have to be sober and do our best and try to serve Prabhupada. Because I think that's the overriding motivation of these devotees. They think, I have this service to do for Prabhupada and I'm trying to stay healthy, but, you know, it's like, what do they say, chasing good money after bad. It's like, I'm trying, but it's not really helping, so... Okay, whatever. Whatever Krishna's giving me. And ultimately, what can we do? Krishna's going to take it away, that's for sure. Anything on the ladies' side before I... Well, I'll look back here after Dharmaraj.
So you did mention that that one of the greatest service or essences is to spread the Lord's glories. I'm always confused about that statement. What does that mean?
I didn't hear the first thing you said.
Oh, so it says that the greatest ecstasy is to spread the Lord's glories.
Oh, uh-huh.
The
greatest symptom of love.
Symptom of love. Oh, what does that mean? And we always hear this saying also that one who spreads the Lord's holy names, you know, he is like most dear to the Lord, or spreads his glories. So does that mean one who goes out there in Harinam and Sankirtan, or what about the ones who clean the Lord's bathroom in the temple, or, you know, who are generally never heard of?
I think it means both things.
Both.
I think it means, for one thing, Prabhupada did want all of us to do, this is an organization. And Prabhupada had this organization consciousness. That when you have an organization, people have to be responsible for their role in that organization. Or just like an army. One person is in the infantry, one person is in the artillery, and one, you know, people are trained for different tasks, and it all works together as a unit. Or the body, each part of the body, to function, each part of the body has to do its particular role. So In that sense, we all have to see that we're part of this mission of Krishna consciousness, and we should have that consciousness that the mission of ISKCON, Prabhupada's movement, specifically Srila Prabhupada's movement, maybe other Gaudiya Vaishnavas have some other idea, but Prabhupada's movement is about preaching, spreading Krishna consciousness. That was his bhava, and we take that from him. So we should have that consciousness ourselves, and that should be in our heart. So whatever we're doing, we should feel that connection, and we should do our service very responsibly. Now, on the other hand, just like in the body, Prabhupada says all the parts of the body are, Prabhupada gave this example many times also about Varnashram. He said that every part is important. You have to have the stomach, otherwise the body can't function. You have to have the legs. The shudras have the legs. They're important. Maybe the lower part of the body, but if you don't have legs, you can't move around. You're handicapped in how you do things. So every part is important, but still, in one level, the brain is the most important. So also in fighting a war, and this is a battle against Maya, we're spreading Krishna consciousness, those who are at the head, in the front lines, they tend to be the ones who get the Congressional Medal of Honor. The infantryman who puts his life at risk, he's the one who gets honored by the country and gets the medals. The guy who's sitting in an office in the desk and designing the base or whatever, it's like I was an engineer, so I wasn't going to get any medals for designing something or other. They weren't going to give me the Congressional Medal of Honor sitting at a desk. In fact, in the Air Force, the jocks, the elite, they're the guys who fly the fighter planes. So they call them jocks, fighter jocks. So they're the big shots. So also they take great risks. In Vietnam, so many of them got shot down in war. And they're the kind of people who tend to get the medals because they're risking so much. So similarly in our organization, the devotees who are out there meeting people directly, head on, one-on-one, and the whole austerity that's involved in that, there's great benefit to be gained from that. So in one sense, it's all one. We're all serving together in this mission to spread Krishna consciousness. But if you're actually performing that austerity, especially devotees who do it day after day, in fact, I sometimes think, even if maybe they're a little neglectful in some other area, possibly, maybe not so polished, still so much to be gained from that. Prabhupada is so pleased by that. It's just no question about it. And when Prabhupada was present with us, how much he wanted that. He said, practically I'm beating them. Distribute book, distribute book, distribute book. Actually, if you want to look up on Folio, you look up this lecture. It's a wonderful lecture where Prabhupada says that in the lecture. Distribute book, distribute book, distribute book. The whole lecture is just amazing. So in that sense, I'm saying both things are there. We all connected. We're all part of the body. So we're connected with Prabhupada's ISKCON body. And we, especially if we have that preaching consciousness, we want to support. In fact, if your consciousness is really absorbed in that, of course you'll look for opportunities for direct preaching. But even if you're not, if you're serving in the back lines, not the front lines, if you're really thinking, I'm supporting the preachers. And we have examples of that in our movement. Just like Jayananda Prabhu. Of course, Jayananda Prabhu would do anything he was asked to do. Sometimes he was out there on the front lines, but generally he wasn't. But he loved to serve the preachers, the book distributors that were going out. Whatever he could do to support them, he just loved doing it because he knew how important it was to Srila Prabhupada. So imagine how much mercy he got, how much advancement he attained just because of that mood that he had. Let me serve these devotees who are serving. Dasa, dasa, nudasa. These are the real dasas. These are the real servants. These are those who are close to Prabhupada's heart. Let me serve them. So if we have that mood, then we can also, that more we have that, the more we can benefit from it ourselves also. So it's the real juice, it's the real juice, the real potency that's running through. The life of the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading Krishna consciousness, becoming janma sarthaka kori, Karapara upakar. So we have to make ourselves Krishna conscious and give it to others. That's the essence of these two things. Yes, one of our great preachers in the back here. Hari Bol, Mother Mahatma.
Just to speak about Srila Prabhupada's glories, I don't know if you all noticed that we have a new boy coming. His name is Josh. And the fact that he just chanted 16 rounds 2 days ago.
Hari Bol, Dr. Josh.
Is due that because he received a book, the Sri Upanishad from Srila Prabhupada 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And those 2 years, you know, it took them a little longer than, you know, to come, but he was chanting for rounds already. So yeah, those books are very potent, no matter who we are, and no matter who is distributing, you know, Prabhupada wrote them, so they are very potent, yeah.
Jai.
He's here now, and he says he's going to come for Ekadasi and chant 16 rounds again. He's hooked on.
All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.